Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Wednesday, September 19th, 2001. In the Creekside Room this morning are Carol Osterlund and Robert Sellers. Today's session number is OSC 2001-03, and it's entitled Exploring Life's Stories: The Creative Path of Memoir and Poetry, Part 3. Let's listen in.
A little bit of business. On the back table, I put the sign-up sheets from the last, the handout sheets from the last 2 days. If you didn't get one, they're back there. And I'll keep adding during the week. If you miss one, if there's any extra, I'll put them back there and help yourself. Also, on our address list that you all have, I had you, because I goofed so and didn't bring the personal journaling magazines that we talked about. If you want one mailed to you, make sure that you put an X after your name. When you get home, we'll mail you one, since the Writer's Digest was so gracious to mail us the complimentary copies. I would hate for you not to get half them. Oh, you don't need to. No, just X your name, and we'll mail you one. It won't be that much. We'd be happy. So
or if you have a list or
add your name there. So this is just a sign up sheet. This is just the extra name if you want a copy of personal journaling. I'll put people pass it around. And then I'm not promoting my book just for us, for our own. I'm thrilled when people buy it, but in case you really feel like you might buy a gift for a friend or something, it's a nice gift for older people who fall in love with light years, and it's been done that way a lot. It is in the bookstore, and the only reason I feel like I can promote it is that you spend $10 for it in the bookstore, and all $10 goes to Holden Village. So if you buy here, you're really making a donation to Holden Village. So for that reason, I feel like I can say, think about it. And then, I have the books up here that we talked about, this Writing for Self-Discovery we referred to yesterday, and The Artist's Way. I know this is in the library here because somebody had found it. But it is, when you go home, they're pretty easy to find. And tomorrow I'll suggest another one. And this is the personal journaling magazine that we talked about, that I read from. And then, of course, these are the kind of magazines that are on the stand just to help you in general if you really want to be more serious about your writing. They have, every month is different. It's a really good publication, and it might encourage you. So that's our little bit of business. Does anybody have anything that they wrote last night and would like to share?
The first one I wrote after I wrote your song was too long and nobody would get it. But this one is
I'm sure you don't mind turning around and facing me.
Okay.
I can hear you better.
The piano recital. Mrs. Ledger was my piano teacher. Her influence equal to any preacher. As an instructor, she was much in demand, and we students performed on her being grand. Every spring, after months of rehearsal, recital time came, no escape, no rehearsal. Our nervousness showed in lots of odd ways, and like it or not, we counted the days till the test of our practice would settle dispute over who would be artist of repute. The infamous recital of 51 was a hummer, intending no pun. Beethoven, Bach, Mozart would ring, with yours truly offering rustle of spring. We're ready, definitely all prepared for this venture, although certainly scared of what might happen when nerves took over and mistakes would make us soon discover that we weren't as perfect as we hoped. It might be hard for us to cope. I was 12 that spring, a preteen child who still was shy, was temper mild, when changes in my life were due, and lots of things were still brand new. My mother decided, as was her right, I couldn't dream of starting a fight, that this was the time for my debut in nylon hose on legs of two. I was tall for my age then, 5'9", but Mama said I'd do just fine if I was careful on that night and didn't string them up too tight. Inexperience at the task made everything harder. I knew nothing about those garters. I stretched those socks till legs were numb, tight as the skin on a kettle drum. A row of penis, we were a sight, crossing our legs to be polite. When playing time came, I jumped to my feet, but both of my legs had fallen asleep. I fell on my face, could not have felt smaller, right there in teacher's baby grand parlor. My sister remarked, "This is absurd," and the rustle of spring was never heard.
She just turned and said, "It's a true story. Nobody doubted it." You know, I mean, it's so personal, and it's
But she like crying for me right now.
Yeah.
I heard that music.
But I was tall and ready. There were no such things as stretch pantos, and these were really tight. And I crossed my legs, and then shut off the
computer. Thank you. Now, of course, obviously you've written a lot before, and you've shared with me that you've done a lot of this.
The only thing I've really done is like paraphrase, like when people have 50 anniversaries and they want their life story written to some familiar melody. But that really is all I've done.
Yeah, but that's okay. Thank you for that. How about somebody else?
When are we going to hear the cowboy song?
Lola? When is our last night? In what room are we for that?
For the social? We're in here.
Oh, we're in here. Okay. Sometimes informally we can just go next door.
Yeah.
And they want to hear the cowboy song because you won't use it too much.
We're the next piano here.
Well, we can schedule from all village recital if you'd like.
How about anybody else?
Nobody else want to share?
Oh. Nobody can top that.
Well, it's not a matter, you know, yeah, I mean, you know, that's a real obvious, you know, this is the way we all feel. And the thing is, there's no competition. You know, everybody's story is so different and so unique.
Just a little bit.
And it's a joy to hear. You have something, huh?
It's tiny. And I'm going to have to sit the center. I'd fall on my face and you'd never hear it.
can you at least maybe have it? Here.
I can't put a sentence together, so I have to put words together. And so I wrote about the bus. And maybe this will help some of you that don't feel like you're as good, because I'm not. Noisy, hot, smelly, exciting, and scary. My sister and I in Sunday dresses. Mom in hat, perfect order. Pulling on her kid gloves, doing hanky out. Waiting with spit to wipe away smudges. Off to the city for shopping adventure. Oh, here it comes, here it comes.
and this is exactly what I talk about when I say tomorrow we're going to write poetry. This is really a poem. I could take that and show you how to put it in line breaks. And you really have a poem, because a poem is nothing but your own feelings and you capture a moment. The more precise you can be in a poem about a very specific instance, the better it is. You really don't want to use the great big terms like, you know, liberty and, the poems that are written today are really about very specific things. And just really get it beautifully. And a poem doesn't have to be complete sentences ever. So you, that's really what you did. And when I say write poetry, which we're going to talk about tomorrow, you know, this is really exactly what I mean. It's a little slice of life. It's a little vignette. It's just a glimpse into something you're feeling, and you described it very well. So, terrific.
Anybody else?
What is it we are?
Oh, I just asked if anybody had written anything overnight and would have something to share. Do you, Minna?
I did write a little bit.
Good.
But I don't want to take your time.
We want to. That's what we're here for.
Well, I wrote another little essay because you said that we could write maybe about a thing of the past.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
So I call it the blue scarf. In my grandmother's drawer, I found a handkerchief. No, I found a scarf. Admiring its bright blue collar, I asked her why she never wore it. All she answered was that the knitting was imperfect and that the stitches might run. It didn't make much sense to me. The scarf could be used, or it could be unraveled and the yarn be knitted into much needed mittens. This was during the war. Hmm. But the scarf stayed in the top drawer of her chest. Much later, I asked my mother why we couldn't use the scarf or knit socks out of the yarn. My mother answered that a woman who my grandmother had helped through great hardship had given it to her as a thank you gift. But I questioned. Grandmother said it had stitches that might run. It's really good for nothing as it is. Mother looked me into my eyes and said, that woman was blind.
Oh. Thank you, Ben. It is Ben, isn't it? Am I right?
Yes, you are. Two ends of light. I'm
going to talk later about your idea. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's to the time. You know, so here we have three very unique experiences, and yet didn't we really all feel, and we were there with each other, which is really the purpose of what you're trying to leave for your children or your grandchildren. You know, I just can't stress enough, hardly anyone these days remembers World War II.
I do.
Yeah. Well, you're right, outside this group, you know, we went to Pearl Harbor, and it was amazing when we went to that memorial, how few people raised their hands.
We were born then.
That were even born then. You know, we really have unique stories to tell. Mm. And so this is what we're going to talk about today. So, where will you start? Where will you end? What events will you include? What do you leave out? Do you write about your whole life up to the present, or just cover your childhood? Is the emphasis going to be on your inner growth, or the external events of your life, or a combination of the two? Will it be about you directly, or will you write about yourself through portraits of other people or through a third person? Is it going to be a progressive narrative? You know, and this I think is probably the hardest thing to do, and this is what we've been talking about, is to go back and really say, you know, try to start when you were born and where you lived, and it just gets to be that big tree in your front yard that you can't drag away, and so you have to cut it into manageable proportions so you can make use of it. One thing that we suggest is that if you want your kids to know the highlights of your life or this kind of thing, or your grandchildren, just write a timeline you know, just list chronologically the dates you were born, what schools you went to, what your first job was maybe, when you fell in love and got married, the dates of your, you know, just whatever you feel is significant in your life, just list it. And then you don't sort of have to write paragraphs about each one of those things. You can go and then sort of look over that and say, well, this was really an important time in my life, and this is when something changed in my life. And that's where I really encourage you to start writing. How honest are you going to be? How much will you fictionalize? How much are you concerned about holding the reader's interest? Or, you know, and how much do you think you're aiming at the truth, even at the expense of boring your reader? You know, there's just, you sort of have to say, well, this is really my goal. It's important that I get it down. And that's really the most important thing. I don't know that I really agree with it. This is part of one of your handouts for the day, so you don't really need to take notes on it. You have to think of what audience you're writing for. When we started this book, we really didn't know we were writing a book. We started with poems we had written to each other as we traveled. Then we decided we had enough to begin to put together. And more than anything else, we wanted to tell our grandchildren that, hey, it's all right to get old. You don't need to be afraid to get old, because life at every age is wonderful and exciting. And falling in love, as I said earlier, falling in love in your 70s, 60s and 70s is no different than being 40 or 18. The nice thing is that you were tired, you got a lot more time as to this So this just kind of grew. We wanted to tell the story of how we met, which I think, as I said before, I think is a real miracle story. And then we included our early letters, because we were dealing with the death of our spouses and falling in love at the same time. And then we finally put in some prose pieces in between the poetry. So we ended up with 100 pages. And it just kind of happened with that. And I think this is what you'll find, that as you write this event and this event, a pattern will develop. And you'll say, well, I can really put it together that way. And everybody will do it differently. And think about photographs that you can include. And, you know, scrapbook things, memories that you have. Are you writing your autobiography with the idea that your life has been recorded, that you want to preserve it for the future? Or is it sort of just a confessional for you to really sort of say, you know, and in this case you're going to be very personal, and you may not want it to be. You may just be working through some things that you felt like you went through, and maybe there's things you don't want your children to know. And that's your privilege too. In what way are you unique, different from anyone else in the world? Will you try to incorporate this view of your uniqueness, or will you keep it to yourself? The next book of poems I'm working on has some rather, you know, glimpses in my early years. And this is called About Beef Stroganoff.
Minnesota hot dish.
Because I married at 18, just after World War II, molded my life into the returning soldier's dream of home, of yard with apple tree, and children playing there, I never had a real job. I learned to cook beef stroganoff, joined the PTA. We bought a green station wagon with wood panels on the side. I drove the boys to Cub Scout meetings, swimming lessons in the summer. Leanne learned piano, violin, gymnastics, and ballet. I was pleasant to my mother-in-law, smiled and smiled when she gave advice. In later years, my son called me his Donna Reed mother. But I never had a real job. I'm until one weekend, friends opened a caramel corn shop at the local shopping center. They hired me to dress up as a clown. I put on an orange wig with Shirley Temple curls, painted on red cheeks, a wide, wide grin, skipped around the mall, handed out popcorn balls to children, told mothers where they could buy more. I earned $50, bought an electric frying pan. Later on that week, I used it to make beef stroganoff. But I never had a real job, except perhaps to smile. And you see, this is what I was saying. In the old days, we wouldn't call that a poem. It doesn't rhyme. It's in very complete, it's just, you know, they're not all complete sentences. And, you know, one line is just until one weekend. And, you know, and that's why I say that's what you wrote. That's what you wrote.
Well, as a feminist, I have to say you did have a real job.
Yeah. Oh, sure. we didn't really think of it. We never thought of it in those days. And then that's my whole point, of course, is that of course I did.
Yeah.
And we value the women who are able to stay home with their children, and I'm grateful that I was able to.
Because you never see, because she never puts down a retired housewife.
Because she never retired. This is kind of in the same vein. As I say, by the end of the week, you'll know more about me than you really probably need to know. But anyway, if you any time you share your writing, it has to come out this way because you're really sharing the essence of yourself, and you have to put your emotions in and be willing to. There's a fine line, and we'll talk about with poetry, about being sentimental and being emotional and letting the emotion show without being overly sentimental. It's a real fine line in writing. This is called The Broken Times. My last doll arrived Christmas morning, the year that I was 10. Looked just the way a doll should look, with porcelain head, real glass eyes, a fall of dark brown hair, two lace petticoats below lilac tinted dress of silk. Through early, middle, late teen years, she sat pristine upon my bed until in a spill of books, laundry, Frank Sinatra records, she fell and broke in pieces on the floor. I put her in a square brown box and never stopped to cry. She waited for me, packed away, like the maxims of my mother. All things work together for good. Choose friends well. Marry for the right reasons. Trust in yourself. Life messes up the promises, like clutter in a room. Children smile and quarrel, grow up much too fast. Disease and death are tangible as fear. A mother becomes a child. A husband turns into a stranger. Mornings follow mornings until one day with nothing else to do, it's time to tidy up the herd. I find my doll again, patient in that old brown box. I take her out, glue the head together, brush her hair, tie it with a ribbon, fashion dress of rose print calico. I have some regrets that she and I could not reach this place unmarked, but in the tender light of evening, I hold her and I know there is no other way to get from there to here for two old dolls. We have kind of a fun handout for you. I think I'll do now. This is the whole handout for the day. Two of them are just kind of spurs for your memory, and we'll talk about these. And then the last, The last page, back in front, is just this overview of how to write memoirs that I'm reading from. But this is kind of a fun spur.
I think that's what you put it this morning.
Oh, it doesn't matter, I just put a bunch. And then you get a lot of things on that table.
Oh, okay. What do you want? What's the rest?
Oh, no, just well, not right now. Just make sure everybody gets something.
Well, I want to make sure they get to the back table.
So you can look at the first two pages. You know, and all of these things.
What are the two pages? The first one is I wanted to write.
Yeah, our printer left off the first one.
No, that's
on the second page. Oh, okay.
Which one do you want to do?
Yeah,
the first
one. Yeah, mine too. Yeah.
Yeah, the first top page, everybody got one? These that came off the internet, I get these things all the time, I don't know why. But the first one was, I want to go back to the time when decisions were made by going in.
I think that's the second page.
Right. No,
the first one. I'm sorry. I
haven't
in the other order.
And mistakes were corrected by simply explaining do-over. And race issue meant arguing about who ran the fastest. And money issues were handled by whoever was the banker in Monopoly. And catching fireflies could happily occur and could occupy an entire evening. Of course, that's not applicable when we don't have fireflies. We have other things that amused us at twilight. It wasn't bad to have two or three best friends. Being old referred to anyone over 20. The man on the tennis court was a perfect guy to play volleyball. The rules didn't matter. The worst thing that we could catch from the opposite sex was cooties. It was magic when Dad would remove his thumb. And it was unbelievable that dodgeball wasn't an Olympic event. Having a weapon in school being caught with a slingshot. On and on. And I have left faces at the bottom that I want you to add and turn them back in and I'll pull them back.
Or else
on
at least
computer.
Or at least think about them, yeah, and bring them to class. And you can keep your sheets.
Then the next sheet the copier left off number one was for Candy cigarette. These are a list of things that we have. They're no longer around.
They brought back
little wax lights. Some of them I don't even know what they were. Like Beanie and Cecil. Somebody will look, ooh, I don't know what Beanie and Cecil.
Oh, no, they were on television. You know, our kids watched
them. Well, hang on, I'm television.
Radio.
Oh, and it was radio? Okay, I'm thinking of somebody else. So you know more than I
do. That's the same thing. Put out 6 or 8 or 10, we'll put them all together. Because I was thinking of one the other night. How about a Pharmacist Dave Bray, veterans from the Civil War.
Well, there wasn't a McDonald's.
Huh?
We didn't have a McDonald's.
Oh, well, it's just that we remember when the first ones came out.
And they were all sanitary.
Yeah, and they were just
$5
They were 5 cents.
The first hamburgers were, yeah, 5 or 10 cents. And so we just remember when they first emerged, and we little fans with the arch.
I can remember seeing the first 1 million sold go up.
Yeah, right.
The arch you could see.
My telephone show was one person and two, one mom and two.
Right. And you all listened and we had party lines.
Oh, yes, you would listen to the neighbors.
The reason for doing this is that all of these things are just things to spur your memory. You think about from your childhood or your whatever year. Things that you remember that, you know, there's the story about the little boy that's cutting up. And he keeps repeating the same silly thing over and over again. And his grandfather says, "You sound just like a broken record." And he says, "What's a record?"
Yeah. Well, I said to my children when they were young, I said to one of my daughters, "If you're not good, I'm going to put Santa Claus is going to put coal in your stocking." Mm-hmm. And she turned around and said, "What's coal?"
So this is just a to spur your memory.
Oh, when you were 15, you listened to radio.
Oh yeah, that's what I remember. And maybe, you know, see how many things you can remember from the radio. I remember the year I was talking about when I was 15, and my mother was ill, so I did most of the cleaning the summer that I was home from school, you know, on summer vacation. And that was the only summer I ever listened to soap operas. And I was 15, and I remember Helen Trent. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the story that asked the question, can a woman over 35 still find romance? And I say, no way. What I remember from when I was little was listening on a crystal set that my brother made, and we had just a little two-bedroom house, and there were four kids, so the three of us girls shared one bedroom, and my brother had a bed in the dining room, in front of the dining room, that was sort of made up like a couch. So that would be my place. I'd go and curl up on his bed and listen to the Lone Ranger on his crystal set. You know, and that was, I think I was about 11, 10 or 11, and that was just wonderful. And then, you know, the other things, how many of you, do you still all know all the songs we sang in the 40s? Sure. You know, I grew up listening to all, my mother and dad sang all the old World War songs, and even, you know, "My Sweetheart's the Man in the Moon, I'm going to marry him soon," which is from the early 1900s. And you know, begin to pull out these little things because they're lost. They're really lost, and they're, you know, nowadays music is so different.
It's fun with your grandchildren when you start singing some of them, like "That's It, Ralston, on the Little Wall of the Wall." And they look at you and they think, "You sang those things?"
Yeah, there's
your notes.
And then you say, they don't write good songs like that. So one of the things that we were urging you to do was to write about what are the houses that you remember. And here's Robert.
Yeah. Well, how did I get, you know, into writing? And I decided after my wife had died that I would take a creative writing class. So I went to the local city college, and sure enough, they got a class in my room. I was older than most of them. The instructor said, I don't care what you write. If you're in this class for a grade, if you write 50 pages, 50 type, double-spaced pages, you've got a name. Gee whiz, that took me long at all. And right then, surprisingly, half of the class that was taking it for credit never could do that much. But one of the things he told us to do was to describe the first house you remember. And I think everybody remembers their first house. The first house that I remember was at 916 West 30th Street in Los Angeles. We moved there in 1920 when I was 2 years old. It was located about a mile and a half from the house where I was born. It was a big house, and my mother and dad, grandmother and grandfather, and a German cook were there most of the time. It seems there was always company, family, and friends. I had a wonderful big backyard to play in, and some playmates. No dog or cat, but like the Smothered Brothers, I had a chicken. They were very large homes, many of which are still standing, and were erected in the vicinity of my first house, and they all dated between 1915 and 1925. The houses on 30th Street were the last of the big houses. The south side in Los Angeles, they became bungalows. And one story, yeah. But north of us, there was a group of homes in what's called St. James Park, and they were mansions, but they probably would not even classify as a good two or three bedroom house today. But ours was a big one. Our home was two story on a big lot and was set well back from the street, painted a light gray, and creeping fig covered most of the fig. The outside was shingled. There was a large front porch where there was a hanging swing where we could sit and watch people pass by. People did walk on the sidewalk, particularly around evening. There were camphor trees planted in the parking strip and two large pepper trees on the east side near the rear of the house. A wonderful fig tree which bore an abundant crop of good black figs was my favorite because I could get up in it. Eat figs to my heart's content. There were lovely homes on both sides. To the west, I remember being in love with the girl that lived there. She was a considerably older, had long, long hair, and was a ballet dancer. The miracle of her being able to dance on her toes was more than I could comprehend. Her family moved, and shortly thereafter, the house was torn down and replaced by a big apartment building. It was a long block and a half to the market, which was run by Mr. Borges. I was allowed to the market to get simple groceries. Our milk was delivered, and every other day, a Chinese man with a horse-drawn wagon loaded with vegetables and fruit would come by singing his song to announce his arrival. And bread and other goodies were delivered. We put a sign in the window for the truck to stop. But the wonder of wonders was the junkman who came by to give us pennies for rags, newspapers, bottles, and all types of salvage. He too had a horse-drawn wagon and sang, any papers, bottles, papers today, any rags, bottles, papers today, as he went along the street. Garbage without the paper in it was put in the containers to be picked up by the city and fed to the hogs. Another container was used for ashes and other things that the junk man didn't buy. But he would buy most of it.
So, you know, this is what we all go back. And hope Robert read that, just because this is just really the top of his head writing.
Yeah.
You know, and we haven't, it hasn't been edited, but he's got down the memory. He got down the essence of what, you know, he did what his teacher asked and got down the essence of what he was trying. You know, now he, if we're compiling it really for his kids, later on he may go through and edit some of that out. But this is what I'm saying. You have to write to begin with as if this is the most marvelous thing you ever wrote. And you write in full thing. And I'm not demeaning Robert's writing, because he painted a picture for us. And his children would learn a lot from that page. So write, and don't try to edit it. Don't try to do anything. Just write the memory. And then put it aside. And then if you decide, well, I don't need this sentence, or I don't need that, that comes later when your critic takes over. But you don't try to criticize your writing as you're writing. You write.
Yeah, that's why I read it like it was. Now, some that Carol wrote, she would describe the room in the house, not the outside, not the things going on. The talk was in the house itself.
Yeah, we had the house. I remember we were on 11th Street in San Jose, very close to this San Jose State College, and we moved there because my dad was a carpenter, and we couldn't really afford to send any of us off to college. But as long as we lived at home, we could walk four blocks to college. And there were seven doors in the dining room. Mm-hmm. It was amazing that the dining room had seven doors. One led outside to the side porch, one led into the kitchen, one led into the pantry, and one unbelievably led into the only bathroom in the whole house, in this old, crazy old Victorian house that I think we rented for $35 a month, which was a little bit of a reach for my family at $35 a month back in the 40s. And then the next door led into the front hall, and there was a closet, and then the last door was into the living room. You know, and so this was, when I think of the family that we were and all of us gathering, I think of this dining room where we meet for a meal and share a meal, and then we sort of each dispersed and went our own way in the seven doors.
Who went into the closet?
I'll never tell.
Whatever your mother, when she was a little girl.
Oh yeah, that's one of my next project for me is I'm really the only one left, because of all my cousins I'm the youngest, and I was very close to my mother who lived with me for 20 years. Hmm. So she told me her stories, and she was she was the original woman's liver at age three. Next is the next the youngest of nine children, and her mother was already in her 40s when she was born. And one day, and my mother talks about having to go down by the creek and get a little switch, a little branch. Her grandmother would switch her legs when she was being bad. And one day, I think she talks about being about three or four, and her mother was beside herself, and she says, "I don't know what to do with you, Dee Dee. I don't usually do this, but you're going to just go sit in my closet and just think about what you've been doing, and I want you to just be quiet and think about what you've done wrong, and you just need some time to yourself." So she closed my mother in her dressing room closet where she kept her clothes, and mother yelled for a couple of minutes, and then she got real quiet, and she kept being quiet, and she kept staying quiet, and finally my grandmother couldn't stand it any longer, and she says, "Dee, what are you doing in there? Huh? What's the matter? You know, are you, what's going on?" And my mother said, "Well, I spit all over your Sunday dress. I spit all over your Sunday shoes. I spit all over your Sunday hat. And I'm just sitting here waiting for more spit."
Oh,
She was the same one who, of course, in later years always gave us sonnets for supper and taught me that the best of me was when I gave something that I created. Well, let's go back to our pages here for a little bit. In your handout, and this is why I'm really not going to take time to read them through in class. On that middle page. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, the third page in your handout. The first one is a real. You know, it's a little more general about ways to get started. And then the reverse of it is really, if you want real specifics, there's really ideas that, you know, if you want to be really organized doing this, this will help you organize. I'm not sure in which way you'd rather approach this whole thing. But... you know, I don't think we need to go over it in class. I'm not a great one for reading to you what you can do yourself. And if these are just good general rules, and if you take them... Is that all? I think one of them... Can you put up something else today?
Huh?
Yes, Mike. This is the last one. Yeah. And then on your last page, let's go to the very last of the handout. In quiet times, I ask myself, what do I want to do that I'm not doing? Mm-hmm. What could I be that I'm not being? What could I say that I have not said? What would I like to own that I do not have? What do I wish to experience that I have not experienced? Robert and I, when we were writing letters to each other, we each wrote each other a list of 40 things we wanted to do. And we actually have done all of them. You know, some of them were the same, but we finally, in 13 years, we've done all of them except, even though we lived in San Jose, we never got over, one of the things I wanted to go over the San Francisco Bay Bridge into
Sausalito
and have lunch at the Altamira Hotel and look back for San Jose. We've never done that. For some reason, we only live, that's just the one thing out of that 40 that we never did do. What would I change that I have not changed? What is dying in my life right now? What is being born? What do I feel like crying about? What brings me joy? And now this is one of your ideas for an assignment, and then I have another one, idea too. If, according to Indian tradition, I could name myself, what word or two would I choose that would tell others exactly who I am? Can you write a few lines about your choice and why? So, in fact, we could really, you know, take a minute. And then I have one other, if you'd like an alternate. Yeah. Minna was telling me that she had the thought about what Holden Village means to you. And, mm-hmm. and tell your little thing that you came up with, your one example.
Well, I thought yesterday that I would write about the Holden spirit. And I sat there, and I sat there, and I couldn't think of what to write. So I wrote the headline, which was The Holden Spirit. And then I thought, what is the first thing that hits me when I come? So I wrote, The Holden Spirit is a bus upon the landing greeting us. The Holden Spirit is a bug giving you a golden hug. The next one is not very good. The Holden Spirit is a chick monk's vibe, reminding you that you two are alive. The Holden Spirit is a mouse boldly roaming round the house. Then I wanted to write about the worm, and that didn't really.
Well, that's, you know, I think that gives us our springboard.
But so that you, was just, yeah. You have probably little things that, and I thought it would be fun if we could together make something.
Oh, and then hand it back in. Yeah. So if you want to, now we have
a little hang out on the board.
So anyway, if you want to think about it, and you know, you can write, think about what Minna said about what to you this week has been, and we can share it for other people.
Just one line.
Yeah, just one. The Holden Spirit is. Just write a line, as Minna suggested. And then something that might be a little longer. I don't know if that this appeals to you, or just what one word you feel like would describe you, or what do you feel. I guess I heard, you know, one or two words. I guess when I thought about it, I decided I was a laughing stream. And I'll write about why I think that. And you know, how an Indian will be, you know, running deer or sleeping fox. Well, I don't know. Foxes.
Dances with wolves.
Yeah. You know. So think about that, since we're sort of in this nature place. What? How do you see yourself? And of course, to write, you really have to know yourself. You have to get in touch with your feelings so you can put those feelings on paper. So all of these exercises really have a purpose to help you say, this is the unique person that I am. Nobody has lived my life. This is why I'm a survivor. These are my fears, and this is how I got through my fears. This is how I face them. This is why I feel joy, and this is the unexpected joy sometimes that comes. It's the greatest gift that you can know. So that's a... Do you all want to just keep talking and listening to your reading? Would you like time to write in class? Why don't we give you... It's a... 11:30. Why don't I give you 10 minutes? And if you don't have paper and pencil, I've got some pads here. Does anybody need a paper and pencil?
Did you think of your name?
On a separate sheet, write down what to you the Holden Spirit is, that you can give us back. Anybody else need paper pencil? So the Holden Spirit is that right, Nana? The
yes.
Holden Spirit is. And that should just be one line or two at the most. And we can compile those and put it on the bulletin board as our way of saying thank you to Holden Village this week. And then the other one that you might want to work longer on and overnight is the one about how you see yourself. Okay? Or, you know, whatever you want to work on. So we'll take 10 minutes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So our 2 minutes are almost up. Do we need a little more time? Or? Anyone like to share what they have written?
I will.
Great.
Holden Spirit is all these wonderful young adults. They tolerate our gray hair, slow walk, and panting with short breath. They work hard to knead our bread, chop our salad, and bake our lunch. They smile and sing and pray out loud in mellow tones at Vespers.
That's lovely. Anybody else?
Poland cares for the land's conservation as much as it does for its own preservation. Everything is a gift from the Lord, and discovering that strikes an innermost chord.
Beautiful. Hope for the world, hope for the individual.
Great.
The whole Spirit is reveling in the smiles of attendees, enjoying the fresh air, seeing the grandeur of the mountains around our village, shuddering at the heights of the hills, knowing full well that this is God's land, and the life of Jesus pervades our thinking and doing each day.
Thank you. What does Holden Spirit mean to me? Hugs the blue bus long gone, beanie saints dear in the village, warm sunshine, lentil loaf, ice cream, chats on the porch swing. Very nice. We all share your feelings. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Holden Spirit is living simply so that life can blossom.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Holden Spirit is the is volunteerism, the personification here is so beautifully done.
Can everybody hear? Read it again.
I'm trying to read it.
Yeah.
Holden Spirit is the volunteerism personified here so beautifully.
Yeah, isn't that true? Well, if those of you who read can give me write it by tomorrow on one line, and the rest of you would give me, you know, two or three lines or four lines or however, we'll put it on our computer and post it on the one of the bulletin boards in the kiosk. There's a nice big empty space, I think, out there still. And we can say this is our way to say thank you for the week from Elder Hostel. So I think that would be nice to do. Did anybody think about, you all wrote about the Holden Spirit. So begin thinking about if you were, or just write whatever comes to you. See if you can bring some little bit of either some personal feeling about yourself tomorrow. If that spurs you, that's fine. If something else does, if you want to write about a special thing you had as a child, here's all these last questions are really on that last page. You could take off on any one of those and write something. If you are so inclined, we would love to hear from you. It enriches the class for everyone to bring their own feelings into it. And I guess we don't have that. There was something, you read it the first day about the real value of the written page. Everybody goes around in this awful civilization with cell phones to their ear, and there are endless words being said. And even, I think about Hemingway when he wrote, and when he was through with something or he thought he might go back, he had a big barrel in the middle of one of his places. Of course, he lived in different, and he would just toss these papers in the middle of this great big barrel. But later on, scholars came and they prized this barrel of things that he had written. And we need to, I almost want to say, be aware of the power of the written word, because it is with us. Unlike a phone call or even on email, I wrote a sonnet, I don't have it with me, about email and about trying to even compose poetry and how different it is. And you write email and click, it's gone, you know, unless you save a copy. And you don't invite somebody to go back through, but everything is just sort of in the present, and then it's gone. So let's not do that. I'll share one of the. This is one of my memories here again, and it's called Conversation 1945. I sit across the table from my father, an apple pie, cinnamon warm. Cools between us on a flowered cloth. I wear the high school sweater loaned to me by Bill, my first boyfriend. Sometimes he forgets to call me. He can spend hours adjusting the transmission of his car. When I want to spend a day at the beach, he chooses fishing with his friends. I don't understand how he can be so sweet and then just disappear. Father's voice is smooth as the honey he stirs in his tea. Your mother, most women, see life as a whole. Family, house, hobbies, all part of the other. Men see things differently, cut their pie in pieces. This is work, this is home, maybe here a fishing trip. All delicious, but separate. He places a wedge of golden crust, tender apples on two yellow dishes. We savor the moment together, but apart. I had a wonderful dad, as I told you earlier. He at one time studied for the ministry and decided he'd rather work with his hands. But he had this beautiful voice, and I remember him reading wonderful classic poetry to us as children, and he loved to fish, and my dearest story about my family is we was in just as World War II was really getting bad, and we were a very close family, and in this old house on 11th Street that I talked about. And it was Christmas, and Christmas had always been very special. We never had much money to buy special presents for each other, but we'd always have something. We'd always disguise everything. You know, my brother would buy me a little drugstore bottle of perfume or something, but he'd put it in an old fuzzy slipper and wrap that up. So then we always felt all the packages under the tree. And the tree was always the center of our family house, and we used to fuss at my brother for tossing the icicles, you know, and not hanging them. And my sister played the piano, and my brother played the violin, and I loved to sing. And my dad had a beautiful tenor voice, so there was always music and warmth. But this year, because of the war, Christmas trees cost about $40 a piece, and our rent for the month was only $35. And my dad just said to us, there's just no way we can afford a Christmas tree. And I was about 13 at the time. And, you know, it just seemed to me the saddest Christmas I could imagine, because without the tree, and there was something that said to me, we'll never have this. This is the time, this may be the last time we'll be together as a family, because my older sister was engaged. The next sister was going to join the waves as soon as she got old enough. And my brother was going to war soon. And he would be called up. And I didn't even know how to pray. I mean, if by a wild miracle, $40 got blown onto the front porch, or I found it walking to school, we still wouldn't spend it on a Christmas tree. There were too many other things that we needed. And a really, just to make things worse, a terrible storm hit about 10 days before Christmas, and the wind blew against the branches on the tree, and this old two-story house that was sort of leaned a little bit really creaked. And it just seemed to me, and I'd go in the living room, and there were a few presents there and around on the mantel, or on top of the piano, and it just wasn't Christmas. And so always every Saturday morning, my mother and dad would go shopping. My mother didn't drive, and they'd go shopping for the week for groceries. And, you know, the Saturday progressed sort of as usual. I heard my brother playing the violin, and the sound of the vacuum cleaner going somewhere. And pretty soon my dad and mother came back, and mother put the groceries away. And I heard my dad out in his shop in the backyard, and he always whistled as he worked. Very comfort sound to me is my father whistling and the sound of his hammer. And pretty soon, about another hour went by, and I was upstairs in my room probably listening to Frank Sinatra records. And my mother called and said, "All of you come down, we have a surprise for you." And so we came into the living room, and there was the most beautiful Christmas tree. It was absolutely perfect. You know, the big green branches and perfectly symmetrical, usually the kind of tree we never could afford. It went about 10 feet high in this old high-ceiling house. And what had happened, they had been gone shopping, but they went down the old street called the Alameda, and a great big pine tree had blown down, and the branches were broken. And my dad had asked the owner, did he mind if he gathered up the branches? So he went in and he brought them home in the back of the car, went out in his shop, took two big dowel sticks, bored holes in, used glue, put the branches in all up the middle of the tree, and my mother wound tinsel up the middle of the Christmas tree. And we had our Christmas. And of course, later on, we kept saying, you know, the old poem by George Kilmer, you know, poems are made, my mother used to say, poems are made by fools like me, but only God can make a tree. And then we always say, except for Daddy. Yeah. So that's actually it was the last Christmas we were together, because as I read yesterday, my brother never came home from the war. Hmm. And so it's a very special memory of mine. These are the kind of things that I wish you could get in touch with. We all have stories, and you've been very gracious to listen to mine. Do you have anything else to
add? Oh, I was going to add a few profound lines. Okay. I promised you profound lines.
I'm glad you're in charge of profound lines.
Well, this was something here. Quick fellow, something to do. He gave us a collection. And this is about stillness. And it was interesting while you were working, why things quiet and everybody kind of hates the silence. It's all about stillness, the incredible welter of passions and turmoil that can be welling up inside a person while for all the world he remains perfectly still. I read somewhere how Anthony Hopkins, when he was preparing for his role as the manservant in Remains of the Day, met an old English gentleman who told him approvingly how he'd once had a butler who, when he entered a room, the room became more empty.
Well, there is a way of being alone with your silence. Give yourself time. Ask yourself the questions on the page, who we are. And we all, every day is such a gift. I didn't finish college because when I was 18, they found TB as I entered college. And back in those days, you were supposed to spend, the only way to get over it was to spend a year in bed. And, or more, you know. And so all through my 30s and my early, through my 20s, until I was 32 when the drugs came out, I really sort of lived on the edge of a precipice. I was never supposed to have children, but I had 30. I did go ahead and marry. because I had to be home anyway and I couldn't go to school. My husband finished college. But I think that I never got over the feeling that life is such a gift. And my children were such a gift. And I learned to enjoy my own stillness and my own silence. And I think that's something that has stayed with me all my life. And I'm sure all of you have had those experiences. We all have had our brush with death in one way or the other. And certainly we have lived a horror this week. And out of it, we try to find this, I love the idea of serendipity, the moments of unexpected joy when you don't think that it's there, and then all of a sudden something really comes and blesses you. And I hope that you're having that kind of an experience this week. You're a wonderful class. And every day, I have to say this has really been a reach for me. This is something I haven't really done exactly this way before. And I guess my prayer every day is that I give you something that will encourage you to be your own writers. I don't want this to be a performance of mine. I'm a terrible ham. And I love to read what I've written. But I want it to be your time when you take something and put your own self into that page to be in front of you. And so really, thank you all for your attention.
Yesterday you inspired me to be holding your grandchild to find it, inspired me to write down.
Okay.
I have some hysterical grandchildren. And I wrote down some of their quotes. They'll never remember how funny they were.
Yes. And if any of you didn't get
How did you know that they were making these things?
Oh, the
other day when we were down there, the first time, this hat was hanging over the counter. And we signed up for the basket. But this lady was in there with a hat on. I said, I knew that. She says, well, we make it. So she came on down.
Weren't there some meeting last night to do the working with her? And I
put a man in the middle.
Well, I saw somebody
who they were a different kind of hat. She had two or three. These were already cut out.